Now, Clarity from Chaos on TalkZone.com, the show that focuses on the innovative solutions to today's issues. Here's your host, Dave Campbell.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you here. For those of you that are listening live, you can call into the show on the toll-free number, which is 1-888-463-6748. Again, that's 1-888-463-6748. Got a terrific guest for you today, a lady that is the director of the William Glasser Institute, and we're going to be talking a lot over the next hour about choice theory, which is extremely interesting, and I think will help you understand why I continually bring up the word choice on this show. But before we get into that, I wanted to go over a couple of articles that I think are really important to you. In these articles, I will post up on my blog site, Clarity from Chaos, after the show. So if there's any parts or pieces of it that you missed while I'm discussing it, you can go out to the blog site and read it for yourself. The first one that I'm going to discuss is 10 facts about the unemployment crisis in the United States. And I think these facts are probably, although you hear some of them on a lot of the other talk shows, I think they're going to amaze you. For example, did you know that there is more than 102 million working age Americans that don't have a job? I know that number, you know, when you sit and think of almost 30% of the population of this country, and there's probably 150 to 200 million working age people in this country. So when you start to think about these numbers, you're looking at a very, very high number. 11 million of those 102 million are considered to be officially unemployed. But what's not talked about and very rarely discussed is the other 91 million Americans that are not employed and not considered part of the labor force. So when you obviously add those two numbers together, you end up with 102. Now, overall, the number of working age Americans that do not have a job has increased over the last 13 years by 27 million people. So when the corporate media continues to tell you just how warm and wonderful things are out there, and if you listened to the show last week when I was talking to Kip Marlowe, you will understand that things are not particularly getting better. And unfortunately, the corporate media out there is not being honest with you. They would love you to swallow the placebo that they put out night after night after night, but as Mike Snyder writes in his article, in this day and age, it's absolutely imperative that people start thinking for themselves, which is the main message that we talk about on a week-to-week basis. Just because the media tells you something is true does not mean it actually is. If unemployment was actually going down, the percentage of the working age population that has a job should be actually going up. And if you read further in the article, you will obviously see that that's not the case. The number one fact about the unemployment crisis in this country is the percentage of working age Americans with a job fell to 58.3% in October. That's the lowest that net number has been since the year 2000, in which it was 58.2%. In other words, over the last 13 years, there has been absolutely no job recovery. And during the last recession, the civilian employment population ratio dropped from about 63% to below 59%, and it has stayed there for 50 months in a row. That's the number one fact that people just seem to not want to discuss on the mainstream media. Let's look at a couple more of these. The U.S. economy has lost 623,000 full-time jobs last month alone. The number of American women with a job fell by 357,000 during the month of October. The average duration of unemployment in October of 2013 was nearly three times as long as it was in October of 2000. The number of Americans not in the labor force increased by an astounding 932,000 people during October. In other words, folks, it's not getting any better out there. And the reason for the article is basically to discuss that you better start thinking. We're coming up into an election next year, and with all of the other issues that we are now facing, it's time that you started thinking for yourself, because obviously the 500 individuals that sit in Washington don't have a bloody clue about how to do anything. Now, the second article, and again, I'm going to post these up on my blog site, so I'm just kind of going over them, is one lady's letter, and I want to read this to you quickly. This is one lady's letter to our president, which I think kind of sums it all up. Dear President Obama, I wanted to take a moment to say thank you for all you have done and are doing. You see, I am a single mom located in a very small town of Palmer, Texas. I live in a small rental house with my two children, drive an older car that I pray daily runs just a little longer. I work at a mediocre job, bringing home a much lower paycheck than you or your wife would ever imagine to live on. I have a lot of concerns about the new Obamacare, along with the taxes being forced on us Americans and the debts you are adding to our country. I have a few questions for you, Mr. President. Have you ever struggled to pay your bills? I have. Have you ever sat and watched your children eat and you eat what was left on their plates when they were done because it wasn't enough for you to eat? I have. Have you ever had to rob Peter to pay Paul and it's still not enough? I have. Have you ever been so sick that you needed to see a doctor and get medicine but had no health insurance because it was too expensive? I have. Have you ever had to tell your children no when they ask you for something they needed? I have. Have you ever patched holes in pants, glued shoes, replaced zippers because it was cheaper than buying new? I have. Have you ever had to put an item or two back at the grocery store because you didn't have enough money? I have. Have you ever cried yourself to sleep but you had no clue on how you were going to make ends meet? I have. My questions could go on and on. I don't believe you have a clue what Americans are actually going through, and honestly, I don't believe you care. Nobody lives extravagantly. While your family takes expensive trips that cost more than most of us make in 2 to 4 years, there are so many of us that suffer. Yet, you are doing nothing to aid in that suffering. I think you are a very selfish and cold-hearted man who doesn't care what is best for the people he was elected to represent, but more so out of the glory of your name attached to history. So thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for pushing those of us that are barely staying afloat completely underwater and driving America into the ground. You have made your mark in history as the absolute worst and most hated president in the United States. God have mercy on your soul. So that's from an individual, and again, I'm going to post this up on my blog site. From a real American suffering very much like all of you are suffering. And then interestingly enough, If that doesn't make matters worse, we have an article from a Federal Reserve whistleblower tells America the real reason for quantitative easing. And this kind of goes hat in hand with everything I've just said. A banker named Andrew Hazar that helped manage the Federal Reserve quantitative easing program during the 09 to 010 is publicly apologizing for what he has done. He was responsible for managing the Fed's purchase of approximately $1.25 trillion worth of mortgage-backed securities. At the time, he thought it was a dream job, but now he's apologizing to the rest of the country for what has happened. And I quote, "I can only say I'm sorry, America. As a former Federal Reserve official, I was responsible for executing the centerpiece program of the Fed, first plunge into the bond buying experiment known as quantitative easing. The central bank continues to spin QE as a tool for helping Main Street, but I've come to recognize the program for what it really is, the greatest backdoor Wall Street bailout of all time." And the article goes on to talk about what is done to basically cripple the middle class and poor and basically take care of the 5% of our population that owns the majority of the stocks in the stock market. It's a pretty scathing article, ladies and gentlemen. But it does kind of lend itself to what we're going to be talking about after the first break with our guest, Ms. Kim Oliver, who is the executive director of the William Glasser Institute. And Dr. William Glasser was the author of Choice Theory. And as Mike Snyder writes in his article, I think it's time that everybody started making some serious choices on what they're thinking about, who they're listening to, and what their own internal intuition is telling them about what is going on. Now, Kim, in addition to being the executive director of the William Glasser Institute, is an internationally acclaimed transformational leader. She has been all over the globe and helping apply the principles of inside-out empowerment. She began her journey in reality therapy in the Glasser Institute. A Dr. Buck inspired her to follow, and she became certified in reality therapy in 93, then became an approved instructor. She's not only has this as an accomplishment, but she has written several best-selling books, one, Secrets of Happy Couples. And when we come back from the break, we were going to jump feet first into the entire concept of choice theory. I think you'll find it very, very interesting. And I think what it will do is support the whole concept that you do have a choice, that you do not have to be a victim of your particular circumstance. And one quote from Dr. Glasser, and I might add at this time, Dr. Glasser passed away earlier this year, and he will be sorely missed. But one of the quotes that I read from him I found to be extremely pertinent, and I thought I'd share it with you, and that is, reality therapy teaches that we need not be victims of our past or our present unless we choose to be. So that right there, ladies and gentlemen, is the leverage point that you have to choose to move forward. You don't have to be a victim of what I've just talked about earlier or anything else, quite frankly. You can choose to move in a different direction. So when we come back from the break, we will start talking with Ms. Kim Oliver about choice theory. You're listening to Clarity from Chaos on Talk Zone Radio.
And now, more Clarity from Chaos on TalkZone.com. Here's Dave Campbell.
Well, let's bring Kim on and start talking about choice theory. Kim, how are you?
I'm doing great, Dave. How you doing?
Hi, Kim.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm just fine. So let's talk. Let's start out with discussing with the audience who Dr. Glasser was.
Well, Dr. Glasser was a world-famous psychiatrist who began his work. He was board-certified as a psychiatrist in 1957, and he wrote his probably most famous book called Reality Therapy in 1965. And he started a training institute where the institute has trained over 86,000 people in his ideas of choice theory and reality therapy. He was a pioneer. A lot of the work that he talked about in the 60s and the 70s was very progressive and, I would say, quite a bit ahead of the times. And it's only now that with some of the new research, brain research that's happening, are some of the things that Dr. Glasser talked about in the 60s and 70s being proven by science. So it's really exciting for us who've been following him all these years, with others saying we were a little outside the normal, to
right.
having some of his things really verified. It's just a really great time. Wish he was here to see it all.
Yeah, I mentioned about his passing, and it was pretty sad because the work that he did on choice theory, I just find fascinating, because I think just the word choice, I think, you know, for some reason people, they get hung up on a choice. You know, they make a bad choice and, you know, they feel like, you know, they're saddled with it and they can't undo it, you know, and I think his work gives people the ability to understand that they are not stuck with poor choices or even good choices, that there is always the ability to make a different one, right?
That's right. That's right. And so often people stay stuck in the past and mistakes they've made, or, you know, horrible things that may have happened to them. I mean, you know, everybody has a story and everybody has a past. And Dr. Glasser would be the first one to say that painful things from your past have had a lot to do with who you are today, but they don't determine who you'll be tomorrow and from that day going forward. You get to do that.
Right. And you know, and that was kind of the reason that I went over, you know, the dreadful employment news and everything else. Is because people don't have to be stuck with that. They can change it. You know, they don't have to be victimized by it.
Right.
But they have to make a conscious choice to change. Right.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And it really comes down to getting really clear about what you want and making sure that what you want is something that you have an influence or an impact over. So often we get hung up on wanting things that we don't have control over. You might sit inside your house on a rainy day and want sunshine, but you don't know how, you can't make sunshine.
Right. Well, yeah. Right.
You know, or you may be in love with someone and they decided they don't love you. So you're sitting around saying, "Oh, I want this person back." Well, that's not really in your control either. But it's to focus your energy, your time, and your attention on those things that you do control, and what's one thing you could do that would move you a little bit closer to that goal that you really want, whatever that is.
So with that said, let's talk about choice theory. I know there's, you know, the 10 axioms that go with it. So let's talk about, you know, just choice theory, you know, and the psychology around it.
Okay. Well, the first thing that's the biggest tenet of choice theory is that the only person whose behavior you can control is your own. And, you know, when I do my training, I'll ask people, so whose behavior can you control? And they'll all say their own, because everybody knows the answer. But then the next question is, and whose behavior do you try to control all day long? And the answer
right.
is everybody else's.
Right.
And that's really because if everybody else changes, it would be so much easier for us to manage our lives if people would adapt and change to suit us. Unfortunately, that's not the way it works. People don't generally change just because we want them to. So that's the first tenet. So it's recognizing that, you know, we can't change other people. You know, even with a gun to somebody's head, you can't always get them to do the thing that you want them to do. So it's much more productive to stop trying to change other people and start looking at adjusting yourself and how you can be more accepting of what's happening around you, because it's happening anyway. So whether or not you accept it, if you don't accept it, you can deal with it with a lot of frustration and a lot of angst. If you do accept it, then you can move forward and figure out, okay, given this reality, where do I need to go from here?
Right.
So that's one thing. The other thing is, the only thing we can give or get from other people is information. So in Dr. Glasser's choice theory world, information is always neutral. It doesn't have meaning or value until we decide to assign a value to it. So I know, you know, I use the example of rain, simple example. For some people, a rainy day can ruin their day. For another person, a rainy day can be just exactly what they need because it's been dry and they're a farmer and their crops are, you know, very thirsty. So rain might be a time of celebration. So the rain itself is just information, and it's nothing until we as a person decide to assign it a value. So when we're giving information to other people, we want to try to give information in a neutral way and allow them to assign the value to it that comes from their perceived world, not ours. The third axiom of choice theory is that all long-lasting psychological problems are relationship problems. And this was just Dr. Glasser coming out with a strong stand that if we could learn how to get along better with the important people in our lives, including ourselves, we would not have these long-standing psychological problems. And so he developed a whole list of behaviors that people tend to engage in that distance ourselves from the important people in our lives. And then he developed an equally long list for the things we could do in our relationships that would strengthen them. So he called them the deadly relationship habits and the caring relationship habits. And, you know, he was on a mission to help people decrease their use of the deadly habits. And in most cases, what that boiled down to is people trying to get other people to do what they don't want to do and instead use the caring habits. And that would help improve people's relationships and really cause a lot of the things that we frustrate over and get angry about to go away. The other thing that Dr. Glasser talked about as a fifth tenet I've already talked about, and that was, you know, what happened in the past is important, but it you know, revisiting that past can contribute little or nothing to what we need to do now. And what he means by that is we can talk about what happened in the past all day long, all week long, all month long, forever and ever and ever, but it's never going to change. It's something that you can't impact. It's something you have no control over. It's a page in your book that's already been written. And if you want to stay there, you can. I don't have to try to convince you to leave there if that's where you want to be. But if you want to leave that past, we need to turn the page and to move to a different page in the book.
Yeah, you know, I've often said that, you know, if we treated people as badly as we treat ourselves, you know, along those same lines, then we'd never have any kind of relationship or friends or anything else, because we literally beat ourselves crazy over, you know, the things that have happened in the past or mistakes or whatever, and treat ourselves really poorly.
That's right. In fact, when I ask people who they use the deadly relationship habits with the most, they usually say their loved ones. Because we do. The deadly relationship habits are, I'll just say them really quickly, they're complaining, blaming, criticizing, nagging, threatening, punishing, and bribing. And if you think about who do you do those things with, it's usually your life partner, your children, maybe your aging parents. But when I ask the question, there's one person you do it with more than that.
Right.
And they recognize, yes, we do it with ourselves even more. So rehealing the relationship with ourselves, I think, is really an important step towards becoming happier and healthier.
Yeah, and I think it falls into the whole choice thing about what we talked about when we started over thinking that a poor choice, that we're, you know, we're convicted to that poor choice forever and ever, you know?
Yeah, and I'm really careful about even talking about bad choices and good choices or poor choices, because I think it's just a choice. Whatever
right.
we choose to do is a choice. And no matter how bad you chose, if I were to ask the question to a person who did something they think is really horrendous, if I were to ask the question, could you have done worse? Always the answer is yes. And so part of the tenet of choice theory is that every person, whatever they're choosing, is choosing the best thing they know in that point in time with the information that's available to them to get something that they want. And so I really work hard at trying to help people not punish themselves or others for choices that have been made because it was the best choice they had in that instant. So let's not beat people up, including ourselves.
Right.
Look at what happened. It was important. And let's figure out a way to do it differently the next time. The focus is always on the next time and
okay.
where to go from here.
All right. You're listening to Clarity from Chaos on Talk Zone Radio.
This is Clarity from Chaos on TalkZone.com with your host, Dave Campbell.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Ms. Kim Oliver, the executive director of the William Glasser Institute, and the discussion for today has been, or is, choice theory. So, Kim, let's kind of move forward on basic needs.
So Dr. Glasser talked about five basic needs that motivate all human behavior. So choice theory is an internal control psychology. We don't act because of what's going on outside of us, although what's going on outside of us definitely provides us information and influences the things that we do. However, the things that truly motivate us are the five basic needs, and they always are internally motivated. So we have the need, Dr. Glasser says, love and belonging is the most important one because that's the one that through that we get our other needs met. So love and belonging is the need to be connected to other people, the need for relationships and the need to belong somewhere and feel like you have a place. The second need we talk about is the need for survival. And while that means in many people are familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and Maslow said you have to have your survival need met before you can meet any others, but Glasser's needs aren't hierarchical. His needs are linear. They're, one is not really more important than another, but each of us as individuals value different needs higher than we do others. So, for example, I may have a high need for love and belonging, and you might have a high need for survival, let's say. And so the decisions that we make and the paths we take in life would be very different. So a person with a high need for survival, it's not just about staying alive. It's also about feeling safe and secure. So a person with a high need for survival is usually someone who doesn't get into credit card debt. They save their money and they buy what they want. They're focused on the future. They may have some insurance. They're not risk takers. They tend to worry. And they want to be self-sufficient. So that would be a high need for survival. Then there's the need for freedom. And I call this the need to do what you want, when you want, without restriction. It happens to be my highest need. I like to have that freedom, and it's not usually people with a high need for freedom, they like to have distance from other people. But my high need, I have two. The other one is love and belonging. So what's good for me is while I need freedom in my work, freedom from bureaucracy kinds of things, I don't need freedom in my relationships. But if you're in relationship with me, don't try to control me, because that relationship probably won't work. So freedom is a person who is fiercely independent, usually quite creative, and appreciates the ability to have multiple choices in front of them. And they don't typically care for rules, especially the ones that don't make a lot of sense. And then there's the need for fun. And Dr. Glasser, at least back in the 70s, was the only theoretician who was talking about the need for fun. And he says, we've all got it. And he says, you know, there's that wild and crazy kind of fun that you might get from going out with friends or playing a football game in the backyard or going out dancing. There's also the quiet, relaxing kind of fun that you might get from walking in the woods or going fly fishing or reading a book. And then he also calls fun the genetic reward for useful learning. So if you can remember the last time you learned something that was really useful to you and valuable to you, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I bet you had fun learning it.
Yep, I sure did.
I know I learned calculus in college. It wasn't a lot of fun. But I didn't see the usefulness of it, so that's probably why I didn't have fun learning it. But I can tell you, when I learned to downhill ski or I learned choice theory, they were peak fun experiences for me. And then the last need I saved for last because it's the one that gets us in the most trouble as humans, and it tends to be a uniquely human need, and that's the need for power. If you look in the animal kingdom, you will see animals who fight, but it's usually a fight based on the need for survival. They're fighting for mating rights, or they're fighting for the best territory. It's really linked to survival. They don't just fight for fighting's sake, like humans do.
Right.
We have that need to power over each other, and we're almost born with that need. You can see it in toddlers who are playing together, and one has a toy the other one wants. The one who wants the toy will do whatever it takes to get it. And so powering over other people is not a responsible way to get your power need met, because it keeps others from getting their needs met. So we try to help people learn, if they haven't already learned, how to power with others and how to have power within. And that power within is the part that you get to carry with you wherever you go. No one can take it from you. It's those things that you're good at, proud of, and have accomplished in your life. It's that special gift that each one of us was born with to be able to share with others to help make life better for other people. So that's a high power need. And people with a high power need have the need to be significant. They're usually very organized. They like to lead. They're in charge a lot. And that would be the high power need. And those are the things that drive our behavior. And those needs, Dr. Glasser hypothesized that we're born with a pretty stable need strength profile. And there are some things that will influence those needs. Culture can influence it. Situations can influence it. If one of your needs is being frustrated, even if it's not a high need for you, it will feel big if it's being frustrated. And then my mentor, Dr. Nancy Buck, also developed a developmental model of the needs, where she talks about how the needs change depending on what stage of life we're in. So, while we're born with pretty much a steady genetic need strength profile, it can be affected by certain external factors throughout our life.
I am curious, let me take a step back over the power thing. What are your thoughts on why people tend to give that control, that power away to somebody else?
My theory would be that one of two things. They have a high love and belonging need, and they're trying to get along. They have a high power need, and they're afraid, or a high survival need, I'm sorry, and they're afraid.
Right.
And it could be that if their fun need is high, getting in a power struggle with someone else is not a lot of fun, so they'll give it up.
Right. Yeah, I'm just curious because I see a lot of people willingly giving up their internal power, and I was just curious.
Yeah, it could be that. Another thing that I think comes into play is if they're out of relationship with themselves, they may not feel like they deserve to own their own personal power, so they don't claim it. And you really have to claim it to be able to use it. So I think that comes into play as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of the direction I was thinking myself is I think people are they just don't feel like they deserve to have that kind of control, so they willingly give it to somebody else to do for them.
Mm-hmm. It happens sometimes.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a high power need, it's not that important to you. So you may look at a person who gives their power away and think, oh, you shouldn't do that. But at the same time, it might be the right choice for them because they're more concerned about the relationship. So they'll give their power away to maintain the relationship. And that works for them. It wouldn't work for you.
Right.
So it makes, when you really implement choice theory in your life, you really need to question some of the judgments that you have about other people because you have to understand that how a person perceives the world is very different depending on their experiences and the values that they hold. And so I may see it one way, you may see it the other way, and I do what's best for me, you do what's best for you, and it looks wrong to both of us because I'm looking at you saying, I would never do that. That's not the right thing to do. And you look at me and say,
Yeah. Oh,
you're not doing that. That's a really big mistake. You shouldn't do that. But in reality, what I'm choosing is probably the best for me, and what you're choosing is likely the best for you. And that's a hard lesson to learn.
Yeah, I think it is too. Let's talk about relationship habits.
Okay. I gave you the down and dirty on the deadly ones. I think we can all relate to complaining, blaming, criticizing, nagging,
right,
threatening, punishing, and bribing or rewarding to control. And those are usually done when one person is trying to get another person to do something that they really don't want to do. And so Dr. Glasser talks about the caring relationship habits. And I think these are really important. The first one is listening. And it's not just listening to hear another person, to wait for them to pause so you can jump in with your infinite wisdom. It's really listening to try to understand where the other person is coming from. Try to take a moment to stand in their shoes, in their skin, and look out through their eyes and see what they see. It may not match what you believe to be true. I'm not saying that you need to agree with them. But if you're truly listening, it's a listening for understanding, not just to hear.
Right.
And that will change everything because when you try to understand, then it becomes so much easier to have empathy and to work towards some common ground. The second one is about supporting. And when I talk about supporting, I talk about the quote by Dr. Martin Luther King that says the true measure of a man, and I like to add, or a woman, is not where they stand in times of comfort and convenience, but where they stand in times of challenge and controversy. And I say that as it relates to supporting because it's really easy to support people when they're doing what we want them to do. It's not so easy to support them when they're doing something that's going to frustrate what we want. So an example I use is when my 17-year-old son came to me a week before his 18th birthday and asked me to march him down to the Army recruiter station and sign him into the Army because he wanted to go fight in Iraq. And, you know, I'm not from a military family, so that was behavior that I really didn't understand. And I also was his mother, for God's sakes, and didn't want him to be in harm's way. So my first thought in my head was, oh, no, you don't, baby boy. You are going to Iraq. But, of course, I knew choice theory, and I realized that I really needed to support his decision. This was his life, his choice. I get to make mine, and I had to let him make his. So he did go to Iraq. He went twice. He's back now. He's healthy. He's good. But,
good.
It could have gone any kind of way. And I would have had to adjust because this was a choice that he made. The third one is about encouraging. And when I talk about encouraging, I like to talk about Dumbo and the mouse. And how, if you remember the story, when Dumbo first flew, he was asleep and he didn't know he could actually do it. And the mouse tried to tell him, Dumbo, you can fly. And Dumbo right. says, elephants can't fly. And so the mouse gave him a magic feather. And he said, if you hold this feather, you'll be able to fly. And when I think of encouraging, I think about us being a magic feather for another person, believing in them until they believe in themselves, so that, you know, you're encouraging them to do something that they want to do. And at this time, I'll usually ask people what the difference between nagging and encouraging is, and I'll get answers like tone of voice, or one has a good motivation, the other's not so good. But really the difference is, when you nag someone, you're trying to get them to do what you want them to do. When you're encouraging, you're trying to help a person get the courage or the skills needed for them to do what they want to do. And there's a world of difference between those two.
We're coming up on a break. Can you stay for a few more minutes so we can finish this?
Sure.
Okay, you're listening to Clarity from Chaos on Talk Zone Radio.
Welcome back to Clarity from Chaos on TalkZone.com. Here's Dave Campbell.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Ms. Kim Oliver, and our discussion is centered around choice. Dr. William Glasser's choice theory. And before the break, Kim, we were talking about the positive attributes of relationship habits. Let's just take it from there.
Okay, so the next one is respecting. And respecting is an interesting piece because everybody wants to be respected, but yet it looks different for each of us. I know that, for example, when I go into a military situation or I'm in the South and people want to respect me, they'll call me ma'am. And I can tell you that when someone calls me ma'am, I don't particularly feel respected. I feel old. So what we've learned about respect is we've learned the golden rule, which says do unto others as you would have them do unto you, but that doesn't really work. So when I talk about respect, especially with people that you're in relationship with, I talk about using the platinum rule, which is Tony Alessandro's from the business world. And the platinum rule goes like this: do unto others as they would have you do unto them. So you need to find out what respect looks like and feels like to another person, and then give them what they would want to feel respected, not necessarily what you might want in the same situation. So that's really what respect looks like. And then there's trusting. And trusting is a challenging piece because we've all had trust broken with us. And so what we tend to do is we put those incidents in this sack that we carry around on our back throughout our lives, and it just keeps getting heavier and heavier, and we become less trusting the more we move forward. And so I like to ask people if they've ever promised something and not delivered. And of course we have.
Oh, sure.
And the question I then have is, when you made the commitment, did you mean to follow through? Was that your intention? Or did you deliberately say you were going to do something knowing full well you never were going to do it? And most of the time, it's that you make the commitment, you mean it at the time, and something happens. Life changes, priorities shift, and you just can't follow through on the thing you promised. And I ask people to try to give that same gift to others. When someone says they're going to do something, believe that they mean it at that time and know that it's possible that things may change. And don't get hung up and stuck on the fact that they must do the thing that they said they would do. If you're more fluid with that and more accepting of that, then life doesn't get so complicated. And the other thing I say about trust is that if you trust people to be who they've shown you they are, you'll have less difficulty. So often we trust people to be who we want them to be instead of who they've shown us they are. We have higher standards for people than what they've shown us they're capable of. So we're holding someone to this high standard and they can't possibly meet it, so they're always disappointing us. And so if we kind of adjust our standards to be, I trust you to be the person you've shown me you are, then there's no issue there. Now that leaves room for the person to show you that they're somebody different as time goes on, so you can raise the bar. And the other thing I say about trust, the last thing is that I personally have a spiritual belief that everything that happens to me happens, it can be a positive. So if someone breaks trust with me, I don't necessarily focus on the hurt and the pain and the betrayal and, you know, all the things people tend to get hung up on. Instead, I look for what is the lesson, the gift, or the opportunity in this situation. And sometimes it's just, thank you, I see you now. And that's, you know, that's a gift. Thank you for showing me who you are now as opposed to 10 years from now. So that's kind of how I summarize trusting.
Well, you know, let me just jump in here for a second. I'm just wondering if we take the word expectation out of the equation, then I think it works, because I think where we get disappointed is our own expectation of this or that as opposed to the reality.
Absolutely.
Of yep. What's going on. And
I would concur.
Yeah, I think people have, you know, rightly or wrongly, varying degrees of expectation around the whole issue. And if they take expectation away, to your point, you then start to see the reality of whether, you know, it's good, it's bad, or whatever, right?
Yep. I think that's a good way to look at it. And so then the next one is accepting. And accepting, I think of the Serenity Prayer, only we tweak it a little bit in the choice theory community. We say it just a little bit different, no disrespect intended, but this is how we say the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the people I cannot change, courage to change the one I can, and the wisdom to know that person is me.
Yeah, I like that one. I like that one better.
I love it, because if we could live that way, and I'm not kidding, you know, I'm not trying to kid any listeners and say that's an easy path to walk.
Oh, no, it's not easy at all. But it's like anything that's great, there's a good deal of effort that goes, you know, hat in hand with it, right?
Yes, and practice. And so, you know, it's a ideal to aspire to. But if we can just accept people the way that they are and not try to change them and just accept who they are, usually the things that drive us crazy about our loved ones, the things that we want to change, are such a small part of the other person, but we've blown it up into this big deal breaker or something. And if we take a step back and really gain a better perspective, and we realize how little this thing is in comparison with the whole person that's in front of us, it really isn't that big of a deal. And so, you know, let's just accept and figure out, what do I need to do? If this is how you're going to be, what do I need to do to take care of me? And that's, you know, accept you and take care of me. And
right.
That could mean that you decide not to be in relationship with this person anymore. That's possible. I don't have this situation, but I imagine that if I had someone in my life who was a chronic drug user, I may have difficulty staying in relationship with them because I wouldn't want to watch them self-destruct. But at the same time, I would still love them and care about them and recognize that they have the right to make the choices that they're making. I just can't watch you do it. And so that's, you know, that's honoring their right to do their thing and at the same time taking care of you. So that's...
So- I was just going to say, so you know, unfortunately, we're out of time, Kim. How do people get a hold of you?
Well, they can either email me at kim@kimolver.com, and I want to emphasize there's no I in my last name. People like to put Oliver in there, and that won't get to me. So it's Kim at KimOlver, OLVER.com, or they can call me at 708-957-6047.
Thank you so much for spending the time with us, and
oh,
I appreciate your patience. Yeah, I appreciate your patience on some of the technical boo-boos we had today. And hopefully you can come back in the future.
Oh, I would love that. Thank you.
Oh, that would be terrific. Thanks so much, Kim.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, I hope if you're further interested in the choice theory, reach out to Kim. Or you can also go out to the William Glasser Institute and pull down the book, Choice Theory. I think you would find it extremely interesting. And that pretty much wraps us up for the week. Remember, next week we're going to be kind of changing a little bit. We're going to start drilling down on Mark Levin's amendments, Liberty Amendments. So that should be exciting. Remember that the individual has always had to struggle to keep from being overwhelmed by the tribe. If you try it, you will be lonely often and sometimes frightened, but no price, ladies and gentlemen, is too high to pay for the privilege of owning yourself. Be well and have a great week. See you next Wednesday.